Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Restoring a progressive New York, that's our vision, and it's what's driven the steps we take, and it's what drives the steps we will take ahead together. But I can tell you, in the first 100 days, we've already taken great strides.
Mayor de Blasio has now completed 100 days in office and yesterday gave a 100 days address. I was curious to hear what specific plans, we talked about this on the show yesterday, would take center stage for phase two of his term now that universal pre-K has been approved. But the mayor had other ideas than to satisfy my curiosity. So with me now to listen to some excerpts and talk about them, WNYC City Hall reporter Bridget Bergen. Morning, Bridget.
Good morning.
And Greg David, Crane's New York business columnist and head of the Business and Economics Reporting Program at the CUNY Graduate School of Journalism. Hi, Greg.
Good morning.
And listeners, tweet us your recaps of this year in New York City so far. 100 days in 140 characters. Want to do that? 100 days in 140 characters. Tweet at Brian Lehrer. And we'll read – if any good ones come in, they got to be good. We'll read them on the air.
Bridget, Brian, you should just make it 100 characters for this, 100 characters for 100 days.
Yeah, then we'd have to sit there and count characters in every tweet. So no thanks. Bridget, you flagged about a minute-long clip that you think says a lot, mostly for the mayor's tone. So I'm just going to play this, and then we'll talk about it.
The things we think should be a given, a decent place to live – the income to support a family, a better future for your children.
All right. Sorry, that was the wrong clip. You want to set this up for us and then we'll play it?
Sure. So, you know, as you said, Brian, I think we all went to this speech expecting to hear sort of the big new thing. What was going to define the next 100 days of the de Blasio administration? And what we heard more of was kind of a focusing on what defines who he is as a leader, his style of government, and what he believes, you know, his philosophy for how policy should be created, which is this grassroots, people-powered idea of government. And so the clip we're going to hear is sort of a framing of, you know, how he laid out how he plans to operate going forward and how he has so far.
It will not surprise you that we've experienced some resistance from some powerful interests. There are some people who have a stake in the status quo and don't want to see these changes. It's expected that you experience opposition when you try to make changes of this nature. It's nothing surprising. It's nothing new. Our responsibility is to look that in the face and continue our work and deepen our work. Because the real power resides with the people. Grassroots politics, neighborhood politics, tells us that the people are almost always ahead of their leaders.
So what you hear there and what he went on to do was give some examples of how movements in the city have led to change in policy, you know, citing right out of the gate some of the support that parents have had for extending universal pre-kindergarten and work that people have done on the ground to try and raise awareness around the issue of stop and frisk. And so, you know, I think it was really a signal that here's someone who, while he is currently in a leadership role, still has that sort of campaign hat on and is still very plugged into how activists and organizers on the ground are seeing issues and bubbling them up. And I think that is sort of an indication of how he plans to create policy, having it bubble up from, you know, the grassroots.
And Greg, I'll get to you in a minute. But Bridget, having said that, this 100 days address was more like a campaign speech or even a lecture in political philosophy.
I will say that's when we were in Cooper Union, you know, you had to get there a certain amount of time early, and the music they were playing and just the whole sort of atmosphere felt very much like a campaign rally. Felt, you know, and that's
but why
typical
now?
Political theater.
If he's already been elected and he was touting the speech for a week in advance, why didn't the mayor get more specific about what he already sees bubbling up from the grassroots? I mean, he's been in politics for all these years. He ran for mayor with a vision of what he wanted to do. based on his being a part of this grassroots and then a leader of it for many, many years. He's got to know what he's going to do in his second 100 days before waiting for, you know, the drumbeats to come from every precinct and every borough, right?
I think at this point, the administration is still so focused on, now that they have their money for their signature priority of universal pre-kindergarten, they have to build the infrastructure and get this program off the ground by September. And I think that will continue to be the thing that we hear him talk the most about between now and then. And I think he wanted to talk about some of the things that they have already done. Paid sick leave, you know, starting to build living wage jobs into development projects. And he's going to continue to work on affordable housing issues.
100 days and 140 characters. Michael tweets, snow, 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 snow. Greg David, before we get to some of your particular concerns on behalf of the business community, do you want to jump in on this, you know, political philosophy, looking back, campaign hat versus what am I going to do tomorrow?
Well, yes, I think I share your surprise at the speech. But in a way, if you think about it, this administration has had a narrow message ever since the day it got into office. It basically has been talking about inequality and a few things that fall under inequality, particularly pre-K, sick leave, living wage, and affordable housing. This could have been an opportunity for the mayor to broaden his agenda, but he has clearly and broadened his message to a broader audience, but he has every step of the way rejected that approach because he thinks he commands the allegiance of the majority of New Yorkers. He won 70% of the vote, but he won 70% of the vote of a 24% turnout, the lowest in more than 50 years. So he thinks that's a mandate, and I guess as his administration evolves, we will see whether that's really true.
And you wrote a piece earlier in the week before the speech on behalf of the business community in a way saying basically, hey, look at me, we exist, hello. What were you hoping for?
How about just that, Brian? That would have been pretty good. Look, this administration, the contrast with the Bloomberg administration, in my mind, is amazing. And I guess I've decided deliberate on the part of the de Blasio administration. The mayor, at least once and usually two or three times a week, did an event where he said the economy's really important, we need to get jobs, we need to grow the city. Just a few weeks ago, they inaugurated a new roller coaster at Coney Island. I know Bloomberg would have been there. Instead, we didn't even get a deputy mayor. We got the president of EDC to inaugurate it. Let me tell you, when Seth Pinsky was head of EDC, he never got to do a groundbreaking like that. So I think that sort of sends a message. Now, to be fair, this administration is talking to some of the power brokers. They're talking to the big real estate interests about the affordable housing plan. The new deputy mayor does talk a lot about tech, but I talk to a lot of business people, and all I hear from them is, this guy doesn't care about us, he doesn't understand us, he's taken us for granted. Any one of those is what I hear over and over again.
So, listeners, the first 100 days in 140 characters, tweet at Brian Lehrer, or the first 100 days in 100 words or less, call us up, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692 for Greg David from the CUNY Graduate School of Journalism and Cranes and our Bridget Bergen, City Hall reporter. Greg, this mayor is taking the risk, if you're going to express the disgruntlement of the business community, he's taking the risk that the plight of the working poor is so much worse than the plight of the small business person with no guaranteed sick days, no vacation, a ridiculously low minimum wage, that he's going to focus on bringing up their baseline existence without destroying many of their jobs or future job creation. That's the risk. Here's a little of how he put that yesterday.
The things we think should be a given, a decent place to live, the income to support a family, a better future for your children. In today's New York, people are struggling just to achieve those basics.
So considering where McDonald's workers and car wash workers and others are at, isn't that a reasonable risk to take for a while without the investor class or the merchant class sounding like they're so persecuted?
Well, I would argue that he could do both, but yes, that is the risk he's taking. But I would argue that it's a broader risk. You know, basically, he's decided that the economy, despite what he says about these problems, that the economy in New York is thriving and it'll do fine on its own and it will continue to produce enormous jobs. You know, we have the best job growth of any city, of any major city in the country, and we rival the tech sector in California for the kinds of gains we've made. And he's just hoping it'll continue, because none of his plans will work if it doesn't. If the New York economy doesn't continue to thrive, nothing he wants to do will be feasible. And he's just saying, it's all fine, and I'm just going to let it go on.
Crimsong19 tweets us, 100 days and 140 characters, snow, universal pre-K, stop and frisk, speed limits, charter schools, and did I mention snow? So we see a trend here. But Stephen tweets us, platitudes for the proletariat, policies to chase away businesses and the well-paid, and on to bankruptcy. This is one of your readers, Greg.
Well, I wouldn't. Personally, I'm not prepared to go that far. The other thing that was very surprising about this speech, which he only got a sort of quiet mention in it, is that what the last month showed us is that New York has been captured by the progressives, but Albany has not, where the centrist in chief, the governor, believes in many things very different from this mayor. So much of the progressive agenda is now dead: a higher minimum wage in the city, more authority for the city to do lots of things, and of course the supposed tax on the wealthy, which died up in Albany. So there is a line in the speech about how we'll do what we can do. But remember, New York City has very little power on its own. All the power in this state resides in Albany. And that is a major bump in the road for the progressive agenda. And I guess the other thing I was really surprised at is that there was no fundamental effort to address, all right, we're not going to get what we need out of Albany, so here's how we go forward. Maybe they haven't figured it out yet.
100 days and 100 words or less. Joe in Queens, you're on WNYC. Good morning, Joe.
Good morning, Brian. Yeah, I'm kind of shocked with Greg Davis comparing the mayor to the former mayor in terms of the roller coaster. This mayor cares about people, and he's focusing on people's issues. They're the mayor. He was focused on the business. So for him not to be at the roller coaster opening, it wasn't really that important. It's happening. You have other things to do, so give the guy a break, Ray.
Greg says it can be both. They don't have to be pitted against each other. Do you think not, Joe?
No. They don't have to be pitted against each other, but you have to look at the priority and the agenda. This guy is a progressive guy, a mayor, and he came in and he's trying to do his best. Look what he has accomplished in his 100 days.
Joe, thank you very much. 100 days in 140 characters, the hashtag. And Cocky writes simply, waiting for de Blasio.
The mayor has taken a lot of heat for his punctuality, that is for sure. But I think to Greg David's point about Albany, you do see the challenge that City Hall is facing, even on issues that, you know, set aside the tax for pre-K, his Vision Zero plan and street cameras. And that's something that they're still pushing. They're still hoping to get that legislation at this point. But, you know, again, it's a reminder that the city does have some serious constraints when it comes to affecting the policy that, you know, we live with every day.
Antonio in Bayside, you're on WNYC. Good morning, Antonio.
Hey, good morning, Brian. Listen to your show all the time.
Thanks.
My comment basically is that I don't think all this groundwork that Mayor Bloomberg has created and all this resurgence in the city is just going to disappear. And it's not all, you know, Bloomberg's doing. This kind of interest in the cities and, you know, like the attraction of all these like developments and such is just. It's not all Bloomberg, so I think we should give de Blasio a little break. You know, nothing is going to disappear tomorrow. You know, there's still going to be artisanal cheese shops in Williamsburg, and actually quite an expansion, you know, will continue. So I don't think we should, you know, fret and, you know, have a plan B or something. Everything's going to be fine. We have to
Let's just set the record straight. There are artisanal cheese shops in Williamsburg because of Michael Bloomberg and Dan Doktoroff's vision for this city and the rezoning plan. You're right, it's not going to disappear tomorrow, but you have completely underplayed the role that the policies of the Bloomberg administration took.
But this is happening,
for making this happen everywhere in the city, and I assure you that without them, there would be no artisanal cheese shops in Williamsburg.
Were there not the rezoning of Williamsburg under Mayor Bloomberg, would there not still have been the increase in property values in Williamsburg, that kind of gentrification?
It would have been rezoned for me. No, I don't. Not nearly to what we've seen.
Because we saw in the 2000, you know, the previous decade, we saw property values go up in Manhattan and all over the country in the bubble, and so artists and young creative types of all kinds and et cetera were being pushed out of Manhattan and onto that G train, L train for the first stop in Brooklyn.
Well,
wouldn't a lot of that happen
anyway?
There
would have been some, but it would have been constrained by the zoning. There's just no doubt about it. I do think we should – there's one thing we do need to point to as the next signpost for the de Blasio administration, mm-hmm. and that is the unveiling of their affordable housing plan, which is due in pretty soon. It's due in May. I don't know if that's May 1st or not.
Yeah, May 1st.
This is a very big challenge for them, that they have to move from the Bloomberg effort to encourage affordable housing through incentives to something that will generate much more new affordable housing construction. The underlying philosophy here is the developers are making so much money, we're going to be able to take a big piece of it and find some way to mandate affordable housing. But other cities that have tried that, the track record is mixed. And they have to keep the real estate interests on board. So I think that's the next big challenge. And whether this plan is credible and whether it works will be the next signpost for where this administration is going and how successful it will be.
Before we run out of time, Bridget, I want to touch on the fact that while he gave this political philosophy speech about how the good new programs will bubble up from the grassroots, much of that grassroots energy was directed squarely at him yesterday. As the Times puts it in this morning's paper and on their site, some advocacy groups in the city have grown impatient with the mayor, who was focused on a small number of big issues during his first months in office, with the city hall docket set to expand. The groups are jockeying to ensure their issues get priority. The League of Conservation Voters held an event calling on the mayor to tackle environmental concerns. An hour before Mr. de Blasio's speech, the Alliance for a Just Rebuilding, which represents victims of Hurricane Sandy, issued a list of policy goals they want the mayor to pursue and fast. And Mr. de Blasio has taken steps to curb use by the police of stop and frisk, but even activist groups on that issue hope the administration will do more. Quote, as much as we've seen stop and frisks go down, other small arrests have gone up, said Monifa Bandele, a member of Communities United for Police Reform. She warned against viewing the initial reforms as mission accomplished. All of that taken from today's New York Times. Bridget, what do all those quotes tell you about the mayor's relationship with the grassroots?
I will echo some of that in when I spoke to folks after the speech. There were different constituents who were sitting in that audience who, very careful to praise everything that they heard, you know, wish they'd heard a little bit more about whatever their respective issue was. Small business, transit, labor, carriage horses. And so I think what it says is the city is a big city and there are a lot of groups that are still hoping to have a place at the table with the de Blasio administration. We know what his top priorities have been so far. I think these are folks who are still hoping that there's an opportunity for them to be part of the conversation going forward. Certainly, you know, I think if you want to talk about what his biggest challenge is going to be, the next real signpost, I would argue it's the 152 open labor contracts. Sitting in the front row at this speech yesterday, George Gresham from 1199 SEIU, Healthcare Workers Union, he said to me after the speech that he has said to his brothers and sisters in labor, be patient. You know, He knows that some of them have gone for 12 years without a contract, but to be patient, and he thinks that there will be a good result. It's a really hard problem to solve. There are huge budgetary implications for the de Blasio administration in solving it. I think that will be a real sign of what's next for the city.
And so de Blasio at 100 days will give the last word to Stony Goat NYC, who tweets at us 100 days in 140 characters. The sky isn't falling. No miracles yet. Big surprise. It's only 100 days. Bridget Bergen, WNYC City Hall reporter. Greg David, Crane's New York business columnist and director of the Business and Economics Reporting Program at the CUNY Graduate School of Journalism. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Thank you.